Chapter 9. The week before we began our chosen factions was the first time off any of us had received since we entered the academy. Of course, it wasn't really free. Now that orientation was over, we were 5 students down and too anxious to do anything except nervously calculate our odds. In 7 days' time, we would be selecting a faction, a decision that would dictate the remainder of our year, and nothing had driven that home more than that final day of combat.
"Do they really think we need a week to choose?"
Ella made a face as Alex and I joined her at the table for lunch. It was our second day into the week, and it was obvious everyone had already made up their mind. "They are probably hoping the nerves will get to us," Alex smiled weakly. "Can't say they'd be wrong." I squinted at my twin over my second mug of tea. Even though we weren't expected to attend lessons, most of the class, my friends and I included, had continued the normal routine, which meant I was just as tired as any other day at the academy. "Do they really think we will resign after that day in the mountains?" I groaned. "If we didn't then, we aren't going to now." But my brother was right. By the end of the week, 7 more students had left. I would have thought that after 2 months of hard work and resilience, self-resolve would be contagious. But a week of reflection had taken its toll. Several young men and women weighed the price of a robe against their family, friends, and a comfortable career back home. For some, magic lost. Following my brother and friend, I hurried to the atrium where the rest of our class was waiting. Today was not only the day we would be electing our factions, but also the return of the 2nd through 5th year apprentices and their factions' leaders. We had seen several new faces in passing the past few days. The possibility of meeting Gerard's future mages was too tempting to ignore. I had so many questions, and an apprentice would know firsthand how arduous year one could be. And maybe, just maybe, they could offer some advice. Or so I thought.
"Today, I have exciting news," Master Barclay announced. "In 2 months' time, we have gotten rid of some of the dead weight that has been holding the rest of you back. As of this evening, 2 more first years have decided to pursue opportunities outside of our school, bringing the total to 14.
I looked around the room and saw several people doing the same, but I was unable to identify the missing faces from the crowd. There were too many of us as it was.
"I am happy to say Sir Piers and Master Cedric have not disappointed me in their latest endeavor."
Piers let out a boisterous hoot and toasted the master of the academy.
"And I hope they continue to pull even larger numbers in the months that follow."
I swallowed nervously and glanced at Alex and Ella. They had the same uneasy expressions.
"I understand the majority of you were under the impression that I would be introducing you to the apprentice mages and their instructors. I will be doing no such thing. The only way you will be receiving an introduction is if you are one of the few to pass our end-of-year trials and become one yourself. The training masters and their apprentices will be occupying the eastern wing of the 2nd and 3rd floor. You are not to disturb them. They will only be here under the solstice, and then they will be setting back out to continue their training in the field. While they are here, they are not to be engaged. Any of you found fraternizing will be expelled immediately. The apprenticing mages are the futures of our great institution, and I will not have it squandered by overzealous first years."
Master Barclay paused and then chuckled.
"On a more positive note, I do have the pleasure of introducing the 3 masters who will be your faction leaders for the remainder of the year. Masters Cedric, Acilia, and Nahari, please come join me in the center."
Our current training master, the eccentric alchemy mage, and a tall, foreboding man of Eastern descent stepped forward to stand beside the master of the academy.
"As you know," Barclay continued, "this week marked the end of your orientation. Tomorrow, you start anew with your chosen faction. Masters Eloise and Isaac will continue to lead your sessions on magical theory, but your new faction will dictate what time of the day you report to the library to do so. Sir Piers will still direct your physical condition, but again, your sessions with him will depend on the same. Master Cedric here will be leading the magical application portion of your studies for restoration. Due to a recent resignation, Acilia has been promoted to Master, leading the section on alchemy. And last, but certainly not least, Master Nahari, our returning master for first-year combat. Between the three of them, I am sure you will be kept more than busy."
The master of the academy gave a broad wave of his hand.
"Now you are all dismissed. Make sure to report to the constable before curfew with the name of your chosen faction. Without it, your time here will be considered a resignation."
"Are you ready for the biggest mistake of your life?"
Ellen nudged me as we trudged up the training hill for our first session with Master Nahari. There were already rumors going around that the Master of Combat sent first years packing faster than Sir Piers himself.
"It is the only one worth making," I replied bravely. "I hope you still feel that way when practice is over."
I was about to respond, but found myself speechless. Ella followed my gaze with her own, and her jaw dropped.
"In the name of the gods," she breathed.
Before us stood the most handsome man either of us had ever laid eyes on. I hadn't had much time to study Master Nahari during Master Barclay's introduction the night before, but now the impression was unmistakable. Over 6 feet of sheer, towering muscle greeted my awestruck stare. The Master of Combat had well-oiled black hair pulled sleekly back behind his ears, smoldering eyes of icy blue, bronze skin, and a short, rough stubble that lined his upper lip and chin suggestively. He couldn't have been more than 35 years, and there was an unmistakable air of confidence to his stance. Ella and I stood dumbfounded on the side of the field. Soon we weren't alone, as more and more girls approached the dais, they seemed to filter off one by one in a state of confusion. I counted the number of students. There were far less girls than boys to our faction, 17 amongst the 40 or so young men. Most of my gender had chosen alchemy or restoration. They'd been under the impression that we were disadvantaged for combat. After all, most boys had grown up playing as knights, but few girls had done the same. Now, we were proving exactly how foolhardy our sex could be as the 17 of us stood frozen in place at the commanding presence of ideal masculinity. It was a pleasant surprise. We soon realized our mistake when the shirtless training master ordered everyone to line up and begin the same casting drills as the week before. Unlike Master Cedric, Nahari did not allow weakness, which became evident the moment we ran out of stamina.
"This is combat,"
the new Master of Combat shouted. He paced up and down the lines as we attempted to conjure enough force to distance our targets. Try as I might, I had no magic left. The barley sack would not budge. The princess group was still going strong, but the rest of the class was faltering. Badly.
"You chose my faction because you wanted to be pushed, not coddled. Don't tell me you have used up your magical reserve. No one has unless they are face down on the ground without a spasm left. The only way you will build up your force is if you challenge yourself. Easy will never be good enough."
Master Nahari bent down to meet the darting eyes of a nervous boy to my right.
"Now!"
The boy fumbled, and we all tried to summon enough magic to make the sacks move. Nothing.
"Harder!"
the training master shouted. I tried again, visualizing the force I needed to cast, and launched the projection with all my might.
"You are fighting for your life. Is this all you can give me?"
My arms were shaking badly, and I was lightheaded. But I held on, feeling as if I were slipping away in the process. Several bags, including my own, shuddered and tipped back. A girl to my right fainted. Straining, I ignored the burning sensation in my lungs and carried on, willing the sack to complete its fall to the ground. It shuddered again, and I threw the mental image with every ounce of energy my body could hold. I felt myself fall as the bag dropped back, and a second later, I too hit the ground. My eyes shut involuntarily, and I was dead to the world until someone splashed cold water on my face. Sputtering, I sat up while Ella gripped my arm, holding me in place. The moment I tried to stand, my knees gave out, and an unpleasant sensation hit my stomach. Gasping, I quickly turned my head and threw up the contents of my lunch. Similar sounds were happening all around me, and I realized that there were at least 10 others on the ground, retching away. Looking up at my friend, I could see how clammy Ella's skin had become, and there were dark lines under her eyes. Her hands shook as they held onto my shoulder.
Now you see what it is to push yourself,
Master Nahari told our class somberly.
I expect each of you to reach this hard every time. If you have a problem with my approach, then you should resign immediately as you will not last long in my faction.
15 minutes later, we were dismissed. Ella and I could barely stand, and it was all we could do to hold on to our staffs as we walked down the long training hill for our evening meal. Between the increased workload of Eloise and Isaac, the new weapons drills with peers, and practices with Nahari, we were quickly acclimating to a ritual of misery and little else. After the first month of combat, it became a daily joke between us that we would last the year or die trying. Alex didn't seem to be faring any better either. According to my twin, Master Cedric had been holding out on us, and now, despite his old age, had turned his 2 hours of healing into the stuff dreamt only in nightmares.
He tried to have us animate a corpse the other day,
James piped up, who was also in restoration with Alex.
Never seen anything more disturbing in my life.
How is alchemy going, Ruth?
I turned my attention to our other friend. Ruth snorted.
Terrible.
I could barely see the girl. She was buried beneath a stack of manuscripts that took up the entire space in front of her.
It can't be worse than Master Cedric,
Alex said quickly. Ruth shoved the pile of books and parchment across the table.
You try carrying every herb lore manuscript known to man and then recite it for me.
My twin laughed.
You have Master Acilia. She used to be one of us a couple years ago.
Ruth rolled her eyes elaborately.
It just means she has more to prove. You know Cedric is an old softy. You're just afraid to admit you're beat.
You can trade stitching up animal carcasses with me anytime, sweetling,
he replied flirtatiously. Ruth made a face and went back to reading her books while Ella and I quizzed Jordan and Clayton about their own experiences in combat. We never had an opportunity to catch up in class, so we spent most of our meals critiquing each other's performance. It wasn't always the easiest conversation, to have someone else point out your flaws, but it was something I had decided was necessary after my run-in with Darren weeks back. Better to hear the truth, he'd said, than false flattery. I couldn't believe I was actually following the hypocrite's advice, but it had made sense and stuck with me long after. I had to admit it was helping, though I'd never be able to pinpoint the exact degree of success it warranted. I still struggle day to day in each and every activity in which I participated, but struggle had become a regular condition. If I weren't struggling, if I weren't keeled over in agony, if my muscles weren't screaming at the end of a long day, then I wasn't trying hard enough. Master Nahari continued to test our breaking points. At first I had thought his methods cruel and unrelenting, but as the weeks wore on, I realized he was just a man who saw the sky as our limit. Nahari expected the world of his students because he expected the same of himself. He wanted us to succeed, even if his definition included shattering our magical boundaries on a daily basis. It didn't mean I resented him any less for pushing. It was impossible to remain positive during continual rounds of mental and physical torment, but I did recognize what he was trying to do. It was beginning to pay off. 1 month ago, I would have been thrilled to see my magic stamina outlast the previous week by a couple of minutes, or an extra block during my jousts with Ella. Now my castings carried on a half hour most of the time. My reserve wasn't guaranteed, but even if it failed to increase right away, I was usually able to conjure more powerful castings in the weeks that followed. First years were beginning to slow down, or quit. By the end of the second month in combat, 11 more had withdrawn from the academy. They had left not because they ran out of drive, but because they hadn't improved their castings in weeks. All my life, people had stressed the importance of potential, the amount of magical stamina one was capable of building. We all had a limit. You could have some magic, but did you have enough? Only time would tell which of us did. The hype was beginning to make sense. The academy gave me a year. I hoped it would be enough. I'd seen Darren and his close-knit following. Each one of them had yet to falter. They remained at the top of each class and carried on long after the last of us fell. Some of us were still improving, but we were all fearful how much longer our stamina building would continue. Sure, I had magic, but eventually I would reach the end of its limits. As long as Darren and his friends were improving, there wasn't much hope for the rest of us. Fortunately, as the third month of combat commenced, some of the prince's friends began to falter, though I was loath to admit that neither Priscilla nor the non-heir himself was a part of it. The two burly brothers, Jake and William, had stopped gaining in stamina, and they were beginning to struggle in the increasingly difficult assignments Eloise and Isaac assigned. The only area those two still excelled in was Piers's drills, but it was common knowledge that would not be enough. The brothers hadn't left yet, but Ella and I had a wager going for how much longer they would remain. Neither of us had a fondness for the wealthy brutes. A week later, our friend Jordan resigned, and a couple days after, one of the lowborn boys from Darren's group of 12. There was no shortage to the resignations taking place, and I wondered how many more would follow. Master Barclay had warned that half the class would leave by winter holiday. I had a nagging feeling he was going to be proven right. On the third week of our fifth month at the academy, I walked into my session with Master Nahari expecting nothing more than the same routine that had been drilled into us for the past 2.5 months. Instead, I found Piers, whose session we had just came from, leaning against the edge of fencing that encompassed the boundary of our training field. Masters Barclay and Nahari stood beside him. The three of them looked particularly formidable. I shivered and wrapped my arms around my chest, eyeing the masters with apprehension. The three of them together was not a good sign. Considering the last time Sir Piers had teamed up with the master, I feared for today's outcome. Glancing down the line, I saw Eve smile, albeit uneasily, and Priscilla and Darren exchanged knowing looks. They knew something. The rest of the class seemed unsure, but it was clear that the prince had not been kept in the dark. "Don't they look just lovely?" Ella muttered.
"I feel like they put on those disturbing smiles just to mess with our heads," Clayton whispered back.
I laughed. My friends and I could not be more alike. Moments later, the humor was gone when Master Nahari explained exactly why the visitors were present.
"They've come to check your progress," he announced. "We will be staging a duel between each of you and another student in this class. This will be a chance to demonstrate what you have learned thus far. This is not a test. There are no winners and losers today, and this will in no way influence your trials at the end of the year."
I breathed in a small sigh of relief and heard Ella at my right do the same.
"That said," Nahari noted, "I want each of you to remember today as the day you gained confidence in yourself. I know how hard all of you have been training, and the next 2 hours should be the culmination of your efforts."
I glanced at Ella, and she at I. We knew who our partner would be. We had sparred so many times in class, as well as after. We knew each other's strengths and weaknesses almost as well as we knew our own. Between the two of us, we could easily impress the masters without embarrassing ourselves. Several other students seemed to be thinking the same thing. First years began to pair up almost instinctively.
"Children, children,"
Sir Piers chuckled loudly, stepping away from his post to stand closer to Nahari.
"You are sadly mistaken if you think I will let you pick the same person you have been practicing with all these months."
My stomach dropped.
"I believe Master Nahari and I have a better understanding of your skill set than your pea-sized brains acknowledge. The two of us will choose the one who is, shall we say, best suited for your abilities."
His words made my skin crawl, and I was even more wary from the way his eyes had lit up mischievously during the phrase, "best suited." Something told me Piers had been looking forward to today for far too long. As the sets played out, one by one, I came to understand exactly why. There were only a couple of us left by the time my name was called, but I already knew exactly who my opponent would be. Piers had not forgotten that day with the staffs.
"Priscilla!"
I took a large swallow as the raven-haired beauty took her place opposite mine.
"Begin!"
The two of us circled one another. Slowly. Priscilla looked like a wolf honing in on a kill. She smiled, white teeth flashing, and laughed throatily as I stumbled, desperately searching for an opening. Her muscles gave away nothing, and since we had not been provided any weapons, I had no idea how she planned to initiate her assault.
"You can always forfeit now," the girl said, voice carrying across to our entire audience. "Save yourself the humiliation."
I ground my teeth but said nothing. The only way I would win this match was if Priscilla became too confident and slipped up. My magic was no match for her own. I'd seen her often enough in class to know that it would be a mistake to engage her directly. Maybe someday I would be able to beat her outright, but not today.
"Go ahead, play the coward," she taunted. "I have no problem leading the attack."
Priscilla raised her hand. I recognized the move from training right away. She'd always been a fan of extravagant gestures. Immediately, I cast out a shield, clutching its armholds with all the strength I could muster. The air whistled loudly, and her magic slammed my defense, splitting the shield and knocking me to the ground in the same breath. I'd underestimated the force she would use. None of us had ever practiced being at the receiving end of that drill. I quickly scrambled to my feet, just in time to spot a flying dagger headed for my face. I let myself fall to the ground, hands thrown across my face instinctively. A searing pain shot across my forearm. Warm blood coated my wrists and hair. But I was lucky all the same. The cut had missed any important veins. Wincing, I pulled myself back up, throwing a crowd of flames at my enemy's feet. Priscilla cried out as the fire touched her skin, but a second later, all that remained was a poof of smoke. An outpouring of sand had drenched what remained of my attack.
"Is that it?" the girl jeered. 2 seconds of flame? How about some lightning?"
Lightning? We hadn't learned weather attacks yet, let alone the deadliest of them all. That type of magic was reserved for the apprenticeship, not first years. We weren't supposed to know such complicated castings. Panicked, I glanced up at the sky, only to get the air knocked out of my chest as I was sent sprawling back against the grass. Priscilla was laughing as I doubled over, unable to get back up.
"Really didn't think you'd fall for that one," she giggled.
I spat, blood and saliva hitting the ground as I tried to stand once more. Again, the pain sent me reeling at the core. She could have just finished me off then, but I could tell Priscilla wanted to continue to drag out my degradation.
"You have no place here," she said lazily, circling around as she spoke. "Trying," she added, looking directly at Sir Piers, "is not good enough. The ones that need to learn are the ones I am least worried about."
Priscilla's speech was cut short as she was sent flying against the fence. Arms flailing out widely in front of her, she emitted a loud shriek as she hit the wood. As she fell, I rose up, painfully, using a wooden pole I'd conjured for support.
"You little—"
With my spare hand, I waved away the throwing daggers she had sent chasing after me and redirected them at their former owner. A chill crept up my spine. I had never tried the casting before, though I had seen it once or twice in practice. All at once, a sharp, gnawing sensation surged across my stomach, and I realized uneasily I was fast approaching my limit. Apparently, real battle and adrenaline depleted my magic much faster than 2 hours of practice. Then again, I had just used a large span of magical force to knock over a girl easily the weight of 4 barley sacks at once, and attempted a new casting. So maybe my exhaustion wasn't all that abnormal, in the given context. With a violent gesture, Priscilla halted my blades and let them fall to the ground harmlessly. She stood, breathing a little unevenly, brushing off splinter fragments and dirt.
"It's time I end this, lowborn," she said, narrowing her eyes.
I braced myself for the attack, envisioning a shield as before, but this time her casting came before I could create a substantial projection. Her force field slammed my defense. My head spun wildly as I tried to maintain my casting spectral form, holding the shield for as long as I could. For the longest 10 seconds of my life, I held my ground,
shaking violently and fighting the sharp, searing pain that was filling my head. Then all at once, my shield shattered, splaying into billions of tiny pieces as I was sent staggering backward. This time when I fell, I did not get up. I did not look to peers or the masters. I already knew what their expressions would say. This girl does not belong here. Half of our class had failed, same as I. That was to be expected in a tourney of one-on-one competition. The difference was that my unsuccessful classmates had put up a good fight. I had humiliated myself.
"Will someone please help her back to her seat?" Sir Piers finally asked after I had finished retching onto the grass.
Ella and Clayton rushed forward and grabbed my arm on either side. The two helped me off the ground, and then Clayton ran off to fetch some water while Ella pushed my hair back so that its strands no longer stuck to my sweat-soaked face.
"Thanks," I said quietly when Clayton returned with a flask.
I took a long swallow and then glanced up at the masters and peers. As soon as the commander noticed my gaze, he looked away grimly.
"So much for no consequences," I thought bitterly.
I had just disappointed the one teacher that had been rooting for me. The commander had paired me with Priscilla so that I'd knock the overconfident girl off her high horse. He told her that I could be the one to beat her one day. But instead of validating his declaration, I had just made him seem the fool for vouching for me in the first place. Swallowing the sinking feeling that had set in my throat, I watched the last two matches in a melancholy silence. My friends had already participated in their own rounds. Ella had won her bout against a boy who usually tagged along after the non-air's crew, though he wasn't a part of it himself. The boy had started strong, but my dark-skinned friend had persevered and delivered a harsh blow at the end when the boy had been foolish enough to engage her in swordplay. Clayton had lost to a quiet boy Ella and I had hardly spoken to since the first day of class. Their match had been a pretty even exchange, until the boy had conjured a glaive, feigned an attack to the left, and held the curved blade to our friend's throat. The last pairing to go into duel was none other than Eve and Darren. Watching the two of them engage, I wondered if this was what Ella had meant when she described combat as a dance. The dark, detached prince and the fragile, almost translucent young girl with violet eyes. Their exchange carried on for 15 minutes, each serving a series of crippling assaults that the other deflected with startling precision. I had seen the two of them practice often enough in class, and today was no exception. A shower of flame was greeted by a wall of ice. A powerful exertion of force was met with a large metal-embossed shield that deflected and sent the other's magic crashing into the forest behind. The ground beneath Eve gave way, and she used the same force she attacked Darren with to send herself back upon solid ground. An exchange of blows played out between two spectral blades, until the two ended their castings and held in their hands their personal weapons of choice. Clutching the hilt in both hands, Eve held a long sword that almost reached the entire length of her frame. We had briefly practiced with that type of sword during our sessions with peers, but the way she confidently held the weapon now made me believe she'd spent a lot of time with it before the academy. In contrast to his partner's double-edged sword, Darren clutched a single-headed battle axe in each hand. The two of them circled one another wordlessly. Eventually, Darren jumped in, swiping at his opponent to engage. The two continued to feign and parry, metal on metal thundering across the field. Suddenly, Eve swung out, and Darren hooked her blade with his offhand axe while his other hand's axe struck out, the barest of inches from her neck. Eve dropped her blade, and Darren lowered his weapons. The entire class burst into applause, even the masters. I kept my hands at my sides, seething with envy. Ella was the only other not to join in. We were all dismissed then, and as I limped back to the dining commons, I heard snippets of conversation all around me.
"Definitely not a mistake to let the prince join the academy.
Might as well announce the apprenticeships already. I think today was indicative enough of who the five for combat will be.
Probably the best performance I've ever seen between two first years."
"That girl? The one with the red hair? I heard her family runs an apothecary."
"Shame she didn't choose alchemy since combat clearly is not her calling."
It was too much. Fighting back unwanted tears,
I broke free of the crowd.
Rye? Don't follow me!
I spoke sharply so Ella wouldn't hear the tremors in my voice. My friend nodded and turned back with Clayton trailing close behind. I couldn't face another person after what had happened in class today. I felt as if my entire world had come crashing down, and someone had ripped my dreams away just as fast. I spotted a thick-trunked oak to the side of the field. Immediately, I sank down to its base, hugging my knees and indulging the wave of self-pity I knew was about to hit.
You should go back to your friends.
I looked up, recognizing the voice of the person I least wanted to hear from.
Leave me alone!
I snapped, shame-faced. I must have missed the non-air in my tear-induced rage. The prince stepped away from the side of the tree.
Everyone has bad days.
I stared out at the grassy field.
I don't need your rhetoric right now, Darren.
He stood his ground and continued to watch me, an odd light in his eyes.
Please,
I said, conscious that I would not be able to carry on a defense much longer. My eyes were beginning to water again, and I did not want Darren to see me cry.
Please,
I croaked.
Just go.
I shut my eyes against the tears that were about to break. There was a pause, then the shuffle of movement, followed by silence. I opened my eyes and found myself completely alone. The tears fell freely then. I let them.